Let's start first and talk a little bit about the whole trade and tariff game that's going on. But ultimately, as this happens, what's the potential blowback to U.S. producers, whether it's corn and soybean producers or livestock producers as well?
It's a great question to start this off. You know, anytime we think of a tariff, it's sort of a different name for a tax. And so when we think about this back and forth, adding taxes on goods coming out of the United States or coming from a different country, it raises the cost that consumers ultimately see. So when we see a tariff, China levying a tariff on U.S. ag products, that raises the cost that their consumers would have to pay for U.S. ag products. And so there's other ways they could trade with other parts of the country, but at the end of the day, sort of the takeaway is that anytime there's an increase in the price, there's a decrease in the quantity of a good consumer. So we're going to see some maybe slowdown in consumption when we think about agriculture and the implications long-term. So higher prices in the short run, and then it could be a dampening effect on consumption more in the long-term.
When we talk about the ongoing trade disputes, we know that it makes our goods more expensive on the global marketplace. If we see a potential disruption in demand or a decrease in demand, what happens then? Does that product come back into the domestic market, and does that influence prices there as well?
Think about soybeans, for example. China is going, with the tariff on U.S. soybeans, they're going to be sourcing their beans primarily from South America now. This is kind of the second biggest player for buying soybeans. And so they're going to bid up those beans in South America. They want to get as many of those tariff-free beans as possible. Meanwhile, non-Chinese buyers of U.S. soybeans that aren't facing these tariffs are going to switch away from Brazil beans and come to the U.S. soybeans. But sort of at the end of the day, it does put leave some questions as to where do we end up sort of at a net basis. And it seems like we could see, you know, thinking about this long-term shock to demand, we could be at sort of a net negative position, and that could be higher ending stocks and pressure on prices. And that's for soybeans, but the implications are the same sort of for other ag commodities and ag products as well. So we're going to see some changing of the trade players when tariffs are in effect. But at the end of the day, we think it's going to slow and reduce the kind of the quantity of our goods that are demanded from the global markets and put downward pressure on prices as well.
Throughout this whole trade and tariff game that's been going on in recent weeks, the Secretary of Agriculture has been telling farmers that USDA is going to provide some support or provide some help. How does that play? And what does that potentially mean for U.S. producers?
Right. There's been a lot of talk about, especially in light of sort of the dive we've seen in soybean prices, especially more than a dollar on the boards of trade. Corn had a big setback in prices as well. A lot of promises that USDA and was going to step in and support farmers. We're already in a tough farm economic situation, and this would be on top of that. So, and it's sort of been light on details as to how that would actually come out to play. So this week's post, we sort of tried to think about what are some of the broad categories and the broad ways that the USDA could step in and provide support to agricultural producers, be it maybe income support or commodity price support specifically, or just some sort of supply, efforts to manage the supply.
Let's start first and talk a little bit about income support. What are some things maybe that we're thinking about, and how do the WTO rules come into effect potentially there?
So income support has sort of been the most common form of direct payments that we've seen or government support that we've seen from the federal government over the last couple of decades. Initially, those came in the form of what we call the direct payments. Here, more recently, we've called them the ARC and the PLC program. And basically, these are payments that are made on a per acre or per bushel basis. There is some calculus that goes into a formula that goes into saying, okay, X farm has this much production, and our rate is X per unit of production. And so this is how we come to sort of a payment value. There's been a lot of adjustments here recently to decouple the actual production from the payments, so we use maybe five-year averages or a benchmark, thinking about that, how the ARC payments and PLC payments are made. Those are sort of on a benchmark basis. So the attempt with WTO is to decouple it from actual production, to sort of step away from market-distorting activities. So that creates this sort of challenge of it's sort of hard to line apples up to apples and actually do the math as to how big these payments would be. But on the upshot, these payments could be made pretty quickly. They could be very visible, and so farmers would quickly recognize, the benefits and the outcome of an income support program.
Let's talk about price support. How does that differ, and how does what does that potentially look like?
Yeah, so price support is really kind of a program from an earlier era in agricultural support. The most recent sort of version that we've seen of price supports comes in the form of that LDP, or that loan deficiency payment. This is when the federal government's going to really step in and try to influence the market. They might be buying grain, they might be storing grain, they might be actually setting in floors and paying farmers when prices fall below sort of a price floor. Again, these really start to get in that tricky WTO environment because they do oftentimes have market distortion to them. So market distortion sort of starts to say, where do we, does this price influence how much is raised in 2019 or 2020? And that's always a pretty tricky program. And of course, when we start thinking about market distortion, the biggest challenge with the price support is, where do we set the price? If we get it too high, we could actually exacerbate the problem because it could send a signal for producers to plant even more, say, soybeans whenever we have falling demand. It's sort of tricky how to set that price. It does actually seem like, if you look at some of the conversations that's coming out of the White House or the USDA, that this could be the way they're leaning. And they also seem to have quite a bit of freedom to operate in this space. There's an entity called the Commodity Credit Corp, CCC, that allows some sort of funding to allow the USDA to step into this space a little bit. And there's also a program called Section 32 that allows the USDA to sort of operate in this space a little bit to sort of support the markets. So to keep in mind, if we start to see the thing about market goals or price goals, it's going to be a pretty interesting set of programs that come out if it's in this sort of a space, just because it's pretty complicated.
And finally, the third kind of wing of this would be supply management. Talk to me a little bit about an outline maybe about how that looks for producers.
Yeah, kind of going even further back into our toolkit, the last time we really saw some supply management programs were in the farm financial crisis back in the 1980s, and we had that payment in kind or PIC program. We had really burdensome ending stocks for corn and soybeans and wheat. So this PIC program stepped in to sort of try to idle acres, paying producers not to plant them. We really haven't seen a direct supply management program since then, although we have had the indirect program, the CRP, which has sort of been a conservation program that also idles quite a few acres. And so the benefit of a program like this is that it actually takes acres out of production. So when we think about losing demand and losing buyers of U.S. agricultural products, the concern is low prices because of growing in large stocks. Well, a supply management program removes some of those stocks, actually gets them off the balance sheet. We have less production coming in. Of course, the challenge is it can take many growing seasons for this type of program to see the benefits of it. Of course, yield is still a wild card when you think about what actual production in a given year is, so it can be hard to forecast and manage. And the third challenge is it's a global market space. And so what happens in the U.S. creates global implications, and so it's kind of hard to see the benefits and the impacts when any sort of decrease in production here in the U.S. has impacts around the world as well.
We kind of touched on it a little bit, but how concerning is the whole WTO game into looking at helping producers here in the U.S., and how do we tiptoe that line to make sure we don't get, knocked back there as well?
Yes, yeah, so, in the late 90s and early 2000s, there's a lot of work to really align trade agreements around the world for trade partners to sort of play by a similar set of rules. And And there's a lot of, probably a lot of viewers can remember back to the red box and the amber box and the green box payments that we sort of worked through. And that was really trying to get away from market distorting programs, such as programs that encourage producers to plant one crop or artificially support prices. And so when we start moving into some of these non-income, or we start moving towards those price support programs, those non-farm income programs, you start to get really close to that, and that could lead us into some challenges within the WTO. It's also interesting that we see in parallel with this, there's been some chatter out of the White House that the U.S. is potentially entertaining the idea of withdrawing from the WTO or taking a different stance with the WTO. So it's worth kind of keeping all of this sort of in line, but anytime we step away from some of these trade agreements or these broad stroke agreements on how we'll handle U.S. policy, it starts to further isolate us from that global marketplace.